Wouldn't it be nice to be able to see the future? That would make decision making a lot easier and less risky. Today in Storyline, we meet a woman who had to make a split second decision that would completely change not only her life, but affect her family for generations to come. Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantelle Klingbeil. Thank you for joining me. We're coming to you live. So this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you're very welcome to do so throughout our show. It's simple and you can do it in the way that suits you best. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or text. And if you want more instant interaction, just find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories. Not bedtime stories or children's stories, but real true-to-life stories of Bible characters that faced issues, challenges, and faith questions. People like us, who were confronted by change, crisis, and were called on to make those tough decisions. In Storyline, we focus on these Bible characters. As we step into their world to study life from their perspective, we can see our own challenges and issues mirrored. Studying these Bible characters gives us new perspectives for our lives. And the best part of it all, that is, in these storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Spy stories have always had a following, even in ancient times. It must take a certain type of person who will risk their lives to go undercover to scout out enemy territory. But these people choose to take the risk. There are others who don't have the luxury of a well-informed decision. Sometimes, in life-threatening situations, split-second decisions must be made. For one woman, this decision came in the form of two spies who turned up on her doorstep. If you have your Bible nearby, you can find this exciting story in the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 2. Let's rewind about 3,500 years. It all began as an undercover mission. The Israelites were poised on the very borders of the Promised Land. Joshua selected two men and sent them on this undercover mission. Go spy out the land. But in particular, I'd like you to look at the great city of Jericho. Setting out, they blend in with the evening traffic and make their way into the city of Jericho. Once in, they faced a problem. Where could they go without raising suspicion? They decide to go to the house of Rahab, the local prostitute. At least here, they wouldn't have to raise any good explanations or answer any awkward questions. We don't know who blew their cover, but the king of Jericho got word that two suspicious men were in Jericho. He knew exactly where to look and sent word to Rahab saying, "Those two men that came to you this evening are Israelite spies." And here a remarkable woman steps into history. Rahab knew who the spies were and where they'd come from, but to the king's soldiers who were inquiring, she said, Yes, two men were here, but they left already just before the gate closed. I didn't know who they were or where they came from, but hurry, you may be able to catch them before they reach the Jordan. Actually, Rahab had taken the two men, the two spies, up to her roof and hidden them under stalks of flax that she had put out on her flat roof to dry. Rahab came up to the roof that evening and spoke to the two spies hidden there. She showed a remarkable degree of faith and knowledge of this foreign God, this God of Israel. We know that your God is God of the heaven above and the earth below. We've heard all about him. We've heard about how he made that path through the Red Sea when you came out of Egypt. We've also heard all about what your God did to those two Amorite kings who were opposing you on the east side of the Jordan. We've heard. And our hearts have melted. We've had the wind knocked out of us. We're so afraid. But now, let's strike a deal. I'm sparing your lives. You return the favor. Give me some proof, some sign that when your God gives you this city, my family and my life will be viewed as something precious in your eyes. The two spies were very ready to strike a bargain. Your life for ours, they say. You don't tell anyone our business, and when God gives us the city, we'll make sure that you and yours are safe. Rahab facilitated the spies' escape by letting them down from her roof. You see, her house was situated right on the city wall in Jericho, and using a scarlet rope, she let them down over the side. Once they reached the bottom safely, she gave them some advice. She told them, "Don't go straight to the Jordan. They'll be looking for you. Run into the mountains, the hills, and stay there for 3 days before heading back for the Jordan." The spies must have been impressed with her scarlet rope, so much so that they told her to leave it hanging. This would be the sign. This would be the pledge. When God gives us the city, they said, everyone who is in your home, the home marked with this scarlet thread, would be safe. The two spies made their getaway safely, and they were true to their word. When God gave the city of Jericho to the Israelites, which was within a matter of weeks, Rahab and her family, everyone who was safe under the protection of that scarlet cord, was delivered safely into the Israelite camp. That small decision that Rahab made paid rich dividends. She is listed as an ancestor of the great King David. Scouting out enemy territory involves risks. The people of Jericho were on high alert, and into this highly explosive situation, Joshua sends off two spies. What was he so intent on finding out? What information would be worth the risk? We have with us in the studio, Matt Holly. Welcome to studio, Matt.
Thank you.
Welcome to our studio storyline.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thank you.
It's really great to have you with us. Now, Matt will be, right after the break, taking us back a little and forward. We'll be talking about modern reconnaissance. My guest is Captain Matt Holly. He's with the Army and he's served for over 18 years. Beyond working in the military, he's a family man with three kids and one on the way. And we're especially privileged because he has a desire to work with youth in ministry. Once again, welcome to Storyline.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us.
Thanks.
We have some interesting objects over here on the table. It doesn't look much like the cloak and you know, cloak and dagger, and I don't even see a magnifying glass over here, kind of the standard spy stuff. So what do we have over here?
Well, typically when we're going on a mission, I mean, mission reconnaissance.
It's not the cloak and dagger kind of thing.
Yeah, not the cloak and dagger spy mission, but basically the basics of what we would need in a reconnaissance mission. You know, camouflage to conceal ourselves and blend in with the environment.
Let's have a look at this. Yep. There we go. So this is meant to blend in, right?
Right.
Now this looks a little different to the one you're wearing. Is that also a camouflage?
Yes, it is. This the one I'm wearing was originally designed as more of a more of an urban environment. Mm-hmm.
And this one's more
this
of
is more of a mountainous environment, the terrain that we're in. We're in Afghanistan.
Okay.
Now.
So I see with the browns and greens.
Right.
So this is. It reminds me a little bit of our spies. They weren't in camouflage clothing, but they were trying to blend in in Jericho.
Right, definitely want to blend in, and this would be the basic start.
Okay, maybe they should have had something more camouflage.
Yeah.
What else do we have?
And we also have the multi-use rope or 550 cord we have here. This is used for a number of things. You can use it for medical.
Doesn't look very, very big. Is it strong?
It's very strong, yeah. It's very strong because it's made of, hundreds of tiny little cords inside it that you can take and use for different tools as well. You can use this, actually, the small cords inside, you can actually cut down small branches or small trees, which would help you make a stretcher for first aid evacuation.
You can use the cords inside here to cut down little trees.
Yeah, small trees
bushes
or branches,
yep. Yep. Well, that's incredible.
That's pretty special stuff.
That's useful stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what else do we have?
The other bare essential is just your food. So this is what we would typically take on any type of mission. We would pack these. They're designed to be portable and broken down in small pieces, so you can take one portion with you for one operation and leave the rest back, or take it all and just be able to break it down as you need it.
This feels light. It's really not very heavy, these things. It's meant to be light?
Right. It's meant to be light, easy to transport, like I said, easy to just break apart. Typically, you'd go out for a day-long mission and pack two or three of these in your pack and just break them all down, everything, and then you just, like I said, eat what you want, and when you have time and when it's safe to do so.
This doesn't look like something to eat.
No, this is our step to make it gourmet, and what you do with this is go... water up to the line, and just your basic water in there. You would put in your,
in your
two big packs are usually your meat and your vegetables. So you would put in these packs in and close it, prop it up, and it takes about 10 minutes to steam, and you have a hot meal wherever you are.
A hot meal on the go.
On the go.
That would have turned our spies probably green with envy, to have a hot meal on the go. They wouldn't have even had to look for a place to stay.
Yeah, it definitely makes a difference, that's for sure.
And these, of course, I was playing with a little bit beforehand. They look really interesting.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as far as basic, there are so many tools that are out there, so many different technologies that are available to us. But, I mean, the basics of reconnaissance or any other mission where reconnaissance or espionage is to not be detected, to remain safe, and these allow you to see, you know, these and tools similar allow you to see as far back as possible and still remain safe and hopefully undetected.
So these are all things that would probably help you not to have to get close up.
Right.
Which is something all of these things our two spies venturing into Jericho didn't have the advantage of. So they actually had to go off. I'd like to look at the story from a military point of view. How important would reconnaissance be before a military operation?
Well, it's critical. I mean, we really have the reconnaissance piece tells us everything we need to know about an environment or a culture before we actually go into that culture to operate. So without knowing that, you're really going in kind of blindly. So we would the basics of it that you would possibly evaluate would be the area to see what the terrain is like, what the weather in the area is, what the ins and outs, entry and exit points of a certain plot of land, and then we go into evaluating the people, evaluating the forces that the enemy or whoever it is has available, checking out the infrastructure. What do they have? What kind of capabilities do they have in that area?
So this, even though you're speaking in modern terms, in ancient Jericho, this would be the same sort of things that the spies would be looking out for. Fortification, entry, exit points, military strength.
Yeah, you would absolutely need to know where your advantages are, where the terrain gives you an advantage, where is it safest to enter, where you're not going to put yourself in a compromised situation, you know, tactically.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things are, you know, even with the small force that they were operating with, they're the same concept is what are we going in, how safe are we going to be, and how are we going to get out?
Well, so. Our spies, they tried to blend in, but they could have done with a bit of camouflage equipment because they didn't blend in terribly well.
No.
Very soon they were discovered over here. How important is it to blend in today? I'm speaking at least with binoculars, you don't particularly have to get close enough to blend in. Is it still imperative to have to blend in?
Yeah, I think when we go into truly blending in, it kind of transitions from reconnaissance, which is kind of done before an operation, to espionage or being mm-hmm. embedded into an operation.
And that's two different things?
Sort of two different things. I mean, same concept, you know, to get the information you need, but once you're embedded in an operation, you're there, you're within that culture, within that environment, so you really have to, the blending in piece is you really have to know everything.
The language,
everything
I guess.
About that environment, about the culture, you need to know. When we go into an area for any sort of operation, mm-hmm. we're trained up on the cultural aspects of that land or of that
area,
the community of that
before
area.
You go in.
Before we go, so I mean, mainly, you know, it's to know where we are, to know what we're dealing with, but also to know
how to not be offensive,
mm-hmm. how to not offend another culture when we're trying to go in there and, you know, win their hearts and mm-hmm. let them see that we're on their side. You know?
Well, this is something that our spies really meet up with. And it's not much of their doing, but they manage to win someone's heart over there and loyalties. Why do we have two spies sent? Is this still standard procedure to send in two?
Yeah, I would say I don't know exactly what was in play that they would have taken two or any other larger group. Maybe there were only two that were willing to go, but they... We would always want to go in at least a pair. You know, at minimum, our smallest outpost, our smallest teams would be a pair. Safety in numbers would be the one piece, but then the other piece is if something were to happen, if the mission were to go awry, they would have someone, the other would be available to possibly reach back and reach higher to what would be called an evacuation or just provide a level of protection, a level of reporting that would mm-hmm. be... that you would not have with one person going in. So
it's still also, I guess, on the most basic level, it would be moral support.
Right.
You would still be looking for.
Yeah, that would come down to when it comes down to having two people in the foxhole is a little less lonely than one, right?
and a lot more secure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what particularly struck you from looking from your perspective of our story?
Well, if I mentioned going into an area and having... You would either want really good information and really want to blend in well, or if you didn't have that, you would want someone on your side that's a critical piece to mm-hmm. your success. And I think Rahab was that for these guys. It's obviously, I don't know, just from my perspective, I feel like God's going to not put you in a situation, if you're willing to accept his call, he's not going to put you in a situation where you're not equipped with what you need to do to, you know, succeed in that operation or that mission. So I think Rahab... was that for him for these guys?
These guys.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you've drawn out a great point to the story. They didn't have all the fancy things we have today, but God was there for them, and that's what they really needed to make their mission a success.
Absolutely. Most important teammate, right?
Most important teammate.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been great to have some insider knowledge over here. And this has really helped us to connect a little to those challenges of Rahab's world. After the break, we're back with some more special guests. They won't be undercover as we explore Rahab's dramatic story. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Watching TV can be solitary. Even lonely, but Storyline. At Storyline, we never want you to feel that you're all alone in enemy territory. We want you to feel a part of our community. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. We always really enjoy hearing how Storyline has impacted your life. Last week's story of Elijah's depression brought a lot of discussion. And again, a big thank you to all of you who keep in contact with Storyline. Helping us into the story of Rahab, I have two wonderful agents. I mean guests. If you're a regular Storyline viewer, you will recognize them as they've both been guests in the first season of Storyline. Dr. Gerhard Fundel works at the Biblical Research Institute of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. Gerhard is a careful scholar who comes to us with a tremendous scope of biblical knowledge. So it is a real privilege to have you on Storyline.
Pleasure.
Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
We also have Gina Wallin. She's a gifted writer and editor who works for two wonderful magazines that I would highly recommend, Adventist World and Adventist Review. Thank you for joining us, Gina. We know you have deadlines probably right there.
Right. They're always right there, but it's great to be here with you, Chantel.
And this is a great story that we're tackling this week.
Great one.
We had a lot of fun doing the Bible story section. Well, that was such a cold day back there. When I took my scarf off, I really felt it. This is one of the oldest spy stories that we have in the Bible, although it's not quite the oldest. I think the oldest that we have is sort of 40 years before, where we had another spy expedition sent into the land of Canaan. And Joshua had been part of that party. But what's different about these two?
Well, the first time, 12 spies were sent out, and they all came back, and only two were eager to go back again. Mm-hmm. The other 10 said, no, we can't do it.
Mission impossible.
Right. Mm-hmm. This time, we only have two going to spy out the land, and they come back faithful, just as the first two did.
And they come back with really encouraging news.
Right.
Over there.
There's also the difference that the 12 went through the whole country, mm-hmm. whereas the two had to go into the city, into Jericho, so the area was also smaller.
So it was a little bit more localized, yes, this time around.
Yeah.
We have two stories, but a lot of links between these stories.
Right.
Probably a generation difference, and that's about it.
Yes.
Over here. Yeah. Now, our spies, in the first spies that are sent out, I mean, there's a big section listing their names and the tribes they come from. This time around, we just have these two nameless spies being sent off, but yet we have a foreign prostitute get named. Is this on purpose, or is this some sort of oversight by the author of the text?
No, I think it is on purpose that the focus is on Rahab. She's the star of the story, and the others are just, you know, props, so to speak. So God wanted to focus on her because her story is so remarkable. And exemplary for many people today. You know, they can identify where they came from and where they're today or where they're going to be, just like Rahab.
So it's because of the contrast in particular.
Yes.
Okay. And it shows that God doesn't play favorites. He's willing to look at people who and invite them, mm-hmm. to come to him who aren't maybe of his special group as back then Israel was.
So no favorites over here.
No favorites.
And you don't even have to belong to an exclusive group to win God's favor.
Right.
You can belong to a group that I guess gets a little discriminated against, mm-hmm. at least by her occupation, I'm guessing.
Well, we have the people of Israel who are the chosen people, mm-hmm. but we find throughout the Old Testament that there were other people who came in and were accepted, became part of God's people, who originally did not belong to them. Mm-hmm.
So it was open,
yes.
An open door policy.
Well, God is a God for all people, and he wanted all of them to be saved.
Well, that's a wonderfully encouraging news, but they seem particularly intent on getting into the city of Jericho. At least these spies seem very determined not to just stay out in the hills. Okay, they didn't have the benefit of those binoculars, so they really were eager to get in. But why was Joshua so interested in this particular city?
It was a very important city. It was one of the larger ones, and it protected the gateway to the hill country of Judah with Jerusalem up on top. So Jericho was the oldest, or is still the oldest city in the world that is continuously inhabited. And it is interesting geographically, because Jericho is about 825 feet below sea level. And from Jericho going up to Jerusalem, you have to go up about 3,000 feet.
So you are living below sea level,
yes,
down at Jericho.
You see, Jericho is not far from the Dead Sea. It's about 6 miles north of the Dead Sea and about 5 miles west of the River Jordan. And so the whole area, Dead Sea, of course, as well, is under the sea level.
Well, I find it a fascinating thought to think of a city below sea level.
Yes.
And this was particularly attractive because you said this protected the whole entrance to the valley?
Well, you have. I mean, I've been in Jericho about 8 or 10 times. Mm-hmm. And behind Jericho begins the hill country of Judah. And there's what is called Wadi Kelt, goes up to Jerusalem. And so this area was protected through the city so that people could not just walk up into the hill country.
No wonder he was so interested in finding out what was going on there and finding out about the fortifications, etc., before they ventured in.
It was a fortified city. It's not very large. You know, when you go to Jericho today, it's about 10 acres. It's about half a mile around the city.
Okay.
So when the Israelites had to walk around,
They could do that pretty easily,
yes,
in one day.
Yes, pretty easy. And even the 7 times they had to do it wasn't too far. Yeah.
Wasn't too strenuous. They'd still have some energy left for the actual invasion.
Yes, yes.
It was also a cultural center. There was a very high culture there, and also a real culture, a religious culture of idol worship. It was a center, and I'm sure that our heroine knew all about this culture.
Well, this must have been a part of her life and everything else,
certainly.
Yes,
which makes it more remarkable that she changes sides.
Right. It's amazing, really.
Well, we'll have to talk a little bit about Rahab. What do we know about her? We know she comes from this
Canaanite
background over here. We know she's a prostitute in the city. What else do we know about her?
We know she had a family, because she invited them later to join her to be saved, mm-hmm, although she must have been living alone at the time.
Okay, what makes you say that?
Well, of course, her profession.
Okay.
it's not very conducive to family life, mm-hmm, but also that she was told that whoever she would gather in her home during the invasion, they would be safe.
So she had to get everyone in.
Right.
It's a remarkable degree of loyalty towards her family that you see in the situation.
So. Yes.
That she's fending for her family. What about afterwards? After she actually leaves Jericho, do we follow her any further?
Well, the Bible doesn't say too much, except that she becomes one of the people in the line of David and Jesus.
Well, she's an important person.
She is in the genealogy of Jesus, uh-huh, of the Messiah. So that is an important aspect. We know that she married an Israelite, of course, and became one of the faithful, according to the New Testament, who became an example to us and to the world.
What a change from a prostitute in a pagan city to becoming an ancestor of royalty.
And that's the wonderful thing about God. He can do that. He can take us. It doesn't matter where we came from, what kind of family we grew up in, what kind of culture, because God is beyond culture. He wants to adopt us as His own children, and He can make us into someone we can't imagine before.
I bet she never thought her future could look like this.
Oh, no.
It's a wonderful thought that I don't have to be shackled to my past. Right. There's this break that I can make.
Right.
Well, we are beginning to get our teeth into the story of Rahab, but as soon as we tackle Rahab, the question always comes up. Rahab's story poses that ethical dilemma. is honesty always the best policy? Or is it okay to lie for a good purpose like Rahab did? We'll discuss this in just a minute, so stay with us. We'll be right back. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing the story of Rahab. You can find the story in Joshua 2. Now, as soon as we tackle the story of Rahab, we find a question of honesty. I mean, it really adds to the plot of the story, the way she not only sets the soldiers that are looking for the spies off in the wrong direction, but she gives them false directions that keep them away for 3 days and out of the way. It's pretty admirable in the story over here. Is honesty always the best policy, or are there times when, you know, circumstances dictate that you can
lie
for a good purpose?
Well, this is an important question in Christianity. Mm-hmm. Is it ever right to break one of the commandments?
I don't know. Could one be so dogmatic as to say commandments? Could we call, you know, white lie or helping?
Yes. Well, different answers have been given to this. You know, in Christianity, you have on the one hand those who say there's a certain hierarchy of commandments. Some are more important than others, and if two of them clash, you take the higher one. For example, saving life uh-huh. is more important than telling the truth.
Well, that's definitely what we see coming
right.
out over here.
And the example is always taken by Rahab and said, mm-hmm. well, you know, God approved of that, so it's okay in our case as well. Now, others say, well, both options are bad, so mm-hmm. you choose the lesser evil. Mm-hmm. That is a very common idea amongst Christians, that if I'm confronted with a situation like this, I choose the lesser evil.
Okay.
And then, of course, since about the 1960s, when Joseph Fletcher wrote his book, Situation Ethics, we have the idea that love is really the ultimate mm-hmm. value. And mm-hmm. anything done out of love, whether it's murder or adultery or stealing, whatever it is, if it's done out of love, it's okay.
Okay, well you know, you had me. I was with you the whole time until committing murder out of love. That made me a little bit nervous over here.
That's what Fletcher gives good examples.
Okay, for situational ethics.
Yeah, even for murder.
Well, before you solve our dilemma for us, because we hope you're going to solve our dilemma for us, Gina, which option do you go with?
Well,
the lesser of the two evils? Or
it's difficult, isn't it? But here we have Rahab, and she was convinced that these men were from God. And she's going to do everything she knows to do to protect them. And this is what she knows to do. She does the best that she can with what she has. And she wants to protect them. And so she
That's
lies.
What she does.
That's what she does. Now, should I follow her example? This is the question. On the other hand, how often do I need to hide spies on my roof?
Yeah, I haven't had much need for that lately. But when lying does come in handy is when it, you know, when I'm late for an appointment and I can say, you know, the traffic was bad, when I just overslept, it is kind of face saving.
Yes.
And gives me an advantage in some situations.
Well, another option is, and this has been taken by some Christian, what is called the third option. The third option is God. Mm-hmm. That you don't play God yourself and decide one or the other way, but you leave it up to God. And from the Second World War, there are examples, you know, where the Gestapo came in and said, now where are the Jews you're hiding? And they were hiding Jews, but they didn't say anything. They mm-hmm. didn't say yes or no, they just were quiet. And they weren't found.
Uh-huh.
So there is, God protects his people, you know. But we must be careful not to take the example of a pagan woman who lived thousands of years ago and say, this is my example, so if she did it, I can do it too.
So you're talking about taking one particular piece out of context without looking at all
yes.
the rest of the surrounding things.
And also look at the context of time, you know, and who she was. She didn't have much knowledge about God. She didn't know much about his commandments, but she did what she felt was necessary.
Yeah, I think that's what you were saying, Gina.
Right, right. She just used what she had. And God understands that. He understands where each of us come from. And he will work with us where we are.
Well, that's a big risk. You know, it's almost more, well, put it this way, I have more control if I'm choosing the lesser of two evils or if I'm trying to sum up the situation. But going with your option of saying, okay, this is God's business. I shoot straight here. I just keep honest.
You see, the problem is if we say, choose the lesser evil, then we're making God responsible for us breaking a commandment.
Okay.
Because if I say, well, I had no choice. I had to break that command. I had to lie or steal or whatever. You see, then we make God responsible for our sin.
And we're talking a lot about choices today. That's we're talking about this big choice that this woman makes with very little knowledge and background. And she makes this life-changing, split-second choice. We're going to have to come back and talk a little bit more about this. She goes just way beyond just hiding these two men. She really risks a lot. What exactly is she risking?
Her life.
Okay, that was obvious. But besides her life.
And the lives of her family members, her loyalty to her own city, her own culture.
So you're talking about a way of life that she's risking.
Right.
She won't be able to live the same after this.
No. She has really made a decision here, and that is to go with the true God and his messengers. And she has faith, and she moves forward, and God leads her.
She takes a tremendous risk. She's risking everything. There's nothing she can see. It's all on hearsay, and yet she is taking that risk, making that decision over here.
That's right. In the New Testament, she is, you know, in the book of Hebrews, she is one of the examples that God gives where it says, by faith.
Oh, you're reading from Hebrews 11?
Yes.
Over here?
Hebrews 11, 31. Okay. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace.
So she's right up there with Abraham and
Moses
and
all
Noah.
All the greats of faith.
This woman, there. Because of this decision, this life-changing decision that she makes.
Plus, you know, what did she have to lose, really?
Her life.
Her life, that's right. But her life or her life, because if she had not helped the spies, she knew the city was going to be destroyed anyway.
And it was.
And it was. But because she was willing to risk her life, she was willing to lose her life, she saved it.
And Jesus says the same thing in the New Testament, doesn't he?
Right.
That it's only as we're ready to lose our lives that we actually find them.
It's interesting that in the chapter 2, she says to the spies, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint out because of you. Now, this was a fulfillment of a prophecy that was given in the book of Deuteronomy. In chapter 2, verse 25, God said to Moses and to the Israelites, this day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the nations under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. And it was fulfilled.
Amazing. Well, the story of Rahab just keeps opening up and up, and we keep seeing new facets over here. Rahab bases her belief in God on certain historic events. Is this still a valid foundation for our faith? We'll be right back after the break to discuss this question and more. Speaking about Rahab and that dramatic decision she made to change sides. We just had a text message come in. Unfortunately, it didn't have a name to it, but it was a great message. It says, I found it so amazing that God uses a harlot. I wonder how many of our choices made in secret will pay off in giving glory to God. A great observation. And this is something that definitely comes into play with Rahab, a choice that really gives glory to God.
Right.
We are talking about this risk that she took. If she enters into the solemn oath and agreement with these two spies, I don't know, I would be a little bit nervous. It's dark, we're up on my roof, there's no witnesses, it's just between these two anonymous men. I wonder if she asked for their names and social security numbers up there. What guarantee is there? I mean, she's putting her life on the line and then they will vanish into the dark.
Well, she knew their God. At least she knew about him. And she knew enough to know this was a God that she could trust. And so she is going to put her faith first in God and then in his messengers.
In these two men.
And the two men.
And that was enough for her.
That was enough.
And it was enough for God because she had little knowledge. She didn't know much about the commandments or about the history, but she knew enough to exercise faith and trust.
Well, we wanted to talk a little bit more about her knowledge over here. She is basing her belief in God on certain historic events. She talks about the Red Sea that she's heard about, and in verse 10, she talks about the two kings that had been conquered on the other side of the Jordan, the Amorites. Is this still a valid foundation for our faith? History?
Yes, faith is based on evidence. It's not a blind faith. And we have, as Christians, we do have plenty of evidence if we look at the Bible and the history of the church and the history of Israel. So we are not
left in the dark.
We are not left out in the dark. And she had little to go on. But she trusted that little and used that small amount and based her faith on that.
And we have evidence, too, in our own lives. If we just think about it over the years, think about how God has led, how he has taken care of us. And I like to write it down because I can forget things more often than I would like.
And, so do you have some sort of a journal that you keep?
Right. Actually, my journal is in my Bible. Mm-hmm. When there's a text that really touches my heart or speaks to how God helped me, I write the date on that right in the margin of my Bible. And then I can see, oh, yes, I remember. And maybe years later, I'll go back and I remember when God fulfilled that very text in my life.
Well, that's an excellent idea to actually keep track in the Bible, keep track dates, times, so that in our personal experience, we also have facts to base it on.
Or write the journal.
Right.
I mean, whenever I travel, I always write a report for myself.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, the people I met, so that I can go back and say, oh, yeah, this happened here, and this is what God did here.
So memory, keeping track, this is something that we can keep or base our faith on.
Yes.
How about feelings and those kind of emotional experiences? Although, is that something solid to build faith on as well?
Well, you know, God gave us feelings. Feelings are a part of who we are. And I think we can have feelings, of mm-hmm. course, but to base our faith on feelings is not very reliable, because what about the times when I'm happy and joyful? Great. But what about the times when I'm not? What mm-hmm. when I'm really feeling down and depressed?
Well, in our story of Rahab, she didn't have too many feelings to go by, did she, at that moment? I mean, it was probably more fear and fear of discovery, at least from the part of the soldiers finding out that she was changing sides.
For sure.
Well, she had to make a decision. She could either betray the spies and they would have been captured by the people in Jericho, or she could go with them and say, okay, I protect you and I trust the Lord that has done these things for you.
That he'll extend it and do it for me and for us over here. She lets them out with this rope from her window because she lives on the wall. Out the window and down they go. It's kind of odd to have a scarlet rope. I don't know if that was a fashion statement color back then. I can't imagine that all the ropes they used for tying loads on the donkeys were scarlet.
Probably not, but on the other hand, it was also something God used for that particular purpose. I don't know where it came from, but she had it.
She had the scarlet. What was the significance of using this visible marker on her window?
Well, you know, it's very special. The red, the scarlet cord. I mean, maybe red was her favorite color. We don't know.
Is it your favorite color?
Yes, I love red. Aha. Burgundy, actually.
Okay.
But a shade of red. And, you know, it reminds me very much of Passover, when the Israelites, before leaving Egypt, they had to paint the blood of the lamb that was slain on their doorpost to signify that they were putting their faith and trust in the blood of the lamb, which, of course, represents Jesus. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, here Rahab is letting the scarlet rope down, and it saved the spies.
Yes.
Because it was the means by which they escaped.
Okay.
And it saves Rahab and her family.
So they are also living under the markings on the door, symbolically speaking. They're also living under the protection of the scarlet rope,
right,
in faith.
Yes, it's a wonderful parallel if you look at it. On the one hand, deliverance from Egypt, and here, deliverance from destruction, because Jericho was destroyed and burned.
Fantastic. Well, the story still has so much more to it, but we're running out of time. But I want to give you an opportunity. Tell us what really spoke to you, Gina.
A couple of things. I do like that scarlet cord. I like how God binds us together in love. And I like how it really does not matter what your past is, where you've come from, that God can take you and adopt you and create you into a new person.
Wonderful.
For me, it's the story that she becomes an ancestor of Jesus. And then she becomes an example in the New Testament for all of us Christians. Little understanding or little knowledge, but she based her faith on that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's really been wonderful to have you as we've explored the story of Rahab. If you came halfway through the program and you missed out on a part of it, don't worry. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this episode or any other episode at your leisure. And please remember that Storyline is also available in the iTunes store as a podcast. You can download it and watch the episode whenever you like. Now, don't go anywhere. There's still more right after the break. When the two spies turned up at her door, we can only imagine what went through Rahab's mind. These men were enemies threatening her people and her way of life. She could have captured those men in her house and turned them over to the king and been rewarded. And yet she made that split-second decision and chose to hide them instead. Rahab backed those spies because of faith, a fledgling faith, that the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and the earth below. Choosing against everything that her culture, upbringing, or current profession had taught her, she changes sides. She chose the spies' safety above her own. She picked their needs over her allegiances. She chose God over her king, even though it would have cost her everything. It is that simple, yet decisive decision that had such great consequences for her and for all of those that were dependent on her. I would like to invite you to choose to put the plot of your storyline into the hands of God. It's that simple. It's not complicated, and yet it will be eternal for you and for all those who your life touches through the decisions that you make right now.